Hello, I'm Tim Elliott, and this is Rebite number 10, a short and chewy conversation with somebody really interesting. And today's somebody is Giles Edwards. Giles, why don't you say hello and introduce yourself and tell the people what you do?
Yeah, I think you've set me up to fail there, Tim, with the really interesting intro. So I do a few things, and I one of the things I do is I badly introduce myself when asked. So I am the founder and creative director of Gasp, which is a small independent agency. I host Call to Action podcast, and I think for the purposes of this chat, I am the founder of Isolated Talks.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So it's quite an interesting introduction, if I'm honest. You wear a few different hats like I do. So a man of that sort of ilk. And I was thinking before,
I've got a massive head, Tim. It helps.
I need one because I ain't got any hair like you, which is now. But we have a bunch we could talk about in our limited communication so far. So agency life, we're both been in that world and are in that world. We could have the life and times of Rory Sutherland and how much he likes microphones, I imagine. Podcasting. Another thing we could talk about, but like you alluded to, we're going to talk about a really cool project called Isolated Talks. So there's been a bunch of really cool kind of lockdown projects that are good for humanity, that are focused on connecting us in this uber connected, let physically distance world. And yours is one of my favorites. So why don't you talk a bit about the background, where it came from and all that sort of stuff, and we'll start there.
Yeah, okay, cool, thank you. Well, thanks for saying those kind words. I fall into the Rory Sutherland trap sometimes of trying to post rationalize what it is and how it came to be, and really there's two angles to Isolated Talks birth, if you like. One of them was I was due to talk at a few events over the summer, and I was a bit psyched up for these talks. And of course, they were all cancelled very quickly in around about March when the world set alight certainly in the UK. And it made me think that there must be hundreds, if not thousands, of more talented people in a similar position now stuck in isolation at home with a talk to give to the world and robbed of an audience. So I initially started wondering whether there was, I think that's where the link to Isolated Talk came from, and that kind of parody of TED Talks. But then equally, that first week of lockdown, as someone who runs a small agency or any business, the fact that it's an agency is irrelevant. I realized how fragile work had become very quickly. And I started to feel, I just started to feel pain and stress, and that lack of control was really making me feel quite edgy, I think, for want of a better word. And I thought there must be so many people in the same position. So I kind of slammed the two things together and thought, well, if we can get some of Adland's finest to donate some talks, and in the absence of having to pay a ticket for an event, we can ask people to donate to Samaritans, to help people who are suffering previously were suffering or begin to suffer as a direct consequence of lockdown and the enforced isolation, then it all seemed to marry up really nicely. And that's kind of what happened. That's how it came to be, or certainly how the idea took shape.
It was I can't remember where I discovered it. I think it was maybe Nick Childs or Rory Sutherland's talks, maybe both people who I follow on the socials, in the social world, so have come across it from there. And then just got sucked into that into that Isolated Talks hole, like a bit like a YouTube hole, but yeah, with more purpose and goodness about it. And I got sucked into that hole, and I just thought it's such a great idea, because there's so many, it seems from the outside, that not only did people who usually give talks and had a talk in the bag or had the need, a story to tell, right? donate their talks or donate their time or ideas, but a bunch of other people as well, a bunch of people who maybe haven't had the opportunity or wouldn't like if they weren't sat in their spare bedroom getting up on a stage and talking, right? Is that true? Is that
it's certainly true. And I must say that a key lesson I think that you learn quite quickly in the industry and overlapping creative industries that we both operate in, that having a good idea is really not always the hard bit. Often that's the easy bit, but actually getting an idea into fruition and being made is actually the really hard bit. I mean, Christ, there's millions of amazing ideas that will never see the light of day. And I could not have brought this to fruition were it not for a little help from my friends. They probably don't want me to call them friends, colleagues and work acquaintances, but the likes of Tommy Mason, who's a fantastic designer, Glenn Fisher, who you are no doubt familiar with, who's a wonderful copywriter and author of The Art of the Click, Matt Ballington as well, as he's a web developer. They all supported me to create the platform itself. And then Glenn and I set about inviting people that we knew and had connections with to kind of get the ball rolling, if you like, and donate some talks. And Rory, who you mentioned, was one of the first to throw his name in the ring and donate a talk, which was wonderful. And as you say, off the back of that, we had donations coming in from people who, I don't know, maybe fit into a familiar box of people who are known for giving fantastic talks. But equally, we had talks literally coming from nowhere, just landing. One thing I've been very mindful of as well throughout the life scale of isolated talks, because we're still going, we're releasing a couple of new talks in the next few days. In fact, one thing I was very wary of is that given the state of the world and the pandemic and the inevitable strain it was causing on people's lives, not just work life but home lives, I was very wary and mindful of approaching people and asking for them to donate a talk. We've all been there where a friend asks for a donation because they're, I don't know, running 5 meters and you think, mate, I've tripped over and fallen further. I sound like an arsehole there, but it's the last thing people need at the moment is any additional stress and anxiety, and putting someone on the spot and asking them to do something for a good cause almost pressures people into saying yes, when in fact they themselves would be happier and healthier if they were able to say no. So I think we've relied on people not always, but sometimes approaching us and saying, I would like to do a talk. And it's come from there. And as I say, that's come from many different angles.
I think it's been, like I say, I've enjoyed like being a consumer of the isolated talks, and have used them examples of, because I've been in a fortunate position that made the transition to lockdown life pretty easily. All my talks and workshops just moved to Zoom pretty simultaneous after a few weeks of lack of control and confusion and such like that. But you know, it's been all right. So, but one thing I have learned is that you can't just verbatim move offline life online and expect it to be good, right? Mm. So you can't give a keynote the same as you can, like through Zoom, the same as you can on thing. But one of the things I like about isolated talks is that it's going to be a daft phrase, but they seem real life. They're people in their houses, obviously, for obvious reasons, right? And they're in the background, or I think Rory's was in some English leafy garden, obviously.
Yeah.
Because it's Rory.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you know where he lives, but where he lives is one of the most impressive pieces of architecture I think Kent has to offer.
No, I haven't. I've not seen it, but I have an impression in my mind, obviously, of how it is. But he's you can feel that. I don't want to use the marketing bollocks of authenticity, right? I said that word in this podcast, but yeah, I can feel that the honesty, the realness of each talk. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. That they did. I think one of my favourites was Nick Childs's. I presume you've got hundreds, so I don't know if you remember any.
Oh God, yeah, Facing Things. It's called. It's one of my favourite. Wonderful Facing talk.
That was it, right? And it came at a point. I think there was some really good bits in it where he asked the question, "Who am I?" and said, "Question everything," right? And at that point, I think I and a bunch of my friends who are in this industry who were maybe client services, maybe retainer-based businesses, didn't fare as easy as me. Because, you know, if they served the smaller businesses, they were the ones that were still in the bunker with all the toilet rolls at the bottom of the garden, right, in the beginning. There was a lot of discussion around the question, who am I? Like, what am I for? And using that that time to contemplate it, because life was busy before. And I think what you did, giving those people or amplifying their voices, let's say, right, is a really good thing. And we'll go down in one of the stories we tell about this weird time.
I hope so. I mean, you use the word authentic there, and I'm dropping it in now as well. So, but I think just because that's a word that's been so misused and abused, it doesn't or shouldn't prevent us from using it for the right reasons. And in this instance, having videos, I think one of the there's a few things that were really powerful or have proved very powerful. And I'm giving in all of the credit here to the speakers. None of it is my own, is the fact that you have seen people recording talks from home. They themselves are also in isolation. They themselves are also lacking any Instagram gloss that you might get on other social media channels. And it's pure and unedited. And Rob Schwartz, actually, I'm a huge fan of Rob. He said it has almost a punk-like feel to it because it has that raw element. And I think it's one of the factors that has led to helping people to feel a bit more connected and that they're not alone in isolation. I know that's a bit of a paradoxical thing to say, but seeing other people also at home with a dodgy Zoom camera and or filming on their iPhone, it just made it more real and actually helped people understand that even people they admire in the industry or know in the industry already are in exactly the same boat.
Yeah, I think that's one of the really powerful things. Like ignoring the words, right? Everything is stripped back. I come to, I don't know if that's the right phrase, but it feels like if you were to strip back a performance of a musician's song, it's like everything's stripped back. There is no fancy kind of ring lighting. You're not on a stage. You've not got a, do you know what I mean? It's just people being human and telling the story. And I think, I don't know what you think, like leading on to maybe your agency background, but I think that feeling of, or that type of stripped back, like real human content is something that will, well, I hope anyway, we will take out into the world of marketing and branding and advertising, because it means so much more, right? It's got depth to it.
Yeah. And I'll tell you one thing that I noticed, and I heard it from almost all of the speakers, of which you are one of our most generous, who's donated two wonderful isolated talks. But I was fortunate enough to see, I think it was just 1 week, maybe 2 weeks before lockdown 1.0, is a marketing festival called DMX based in Dublin, run by Colin Lewis. And it's wonderful. I was lucky enough to be there this year. And I saw Wima Schneider my favorite Dutchman, give a brilliant talk. And he actually donated the same talk to Isolated Talks. But in this instance, he was recording it from home. And he won't mind me saying that I know he found it really difficult to record because he's so enigmatic. And he's one of those gifted bastards that's so good on stage. He just absolutely nails it. And he gets that feedback and response from a live audience. He's phenomenal in action. And without having that, I know that he found it difficult to deliver the talk.
Yeah, I can imagine that, actually. So I've been not at Mr. Schneider's level or anything, but I give a few talks, like more than the normal bloke in my local pub. I used to be very keen on slides, right, and have a slides as a prompt and do that sort of thing. And one thing I noticed about the talks in isolated talks is there wasn't any really slides. Like, nobody gives a PowerPoint, right? They were just people sharing, putting an idea into the world, telling a story or an anecdote about something that's happened. Like, there was one by Joe Glover, I think. Mm. Right, Joe Glover did one, and he told, I think it was Love Sells or Love, something like that. Love Sells, yeah. I think it was. But he did one about, told a little story within that presentation about painter jackets, right? Mm. Which is one of the brands I use a lot in talks, as just being like the stripped back version, right? There isn't much more to them. It's Hugh and Becky, and they make these jackets, and this is exactly how they do it. There isn't any massive advertising campaign, right? Mm. It's like they're champions of this stripped back, real human kind of content, which I think is amazing. And your platform is a big kind of amplification of that. So do you have a favorite talk? There's not many people who listen, so
Oh, are you allowed to ask me that? Christ, I've got so many. There's so many talks I love. I mean, Nick Childs is, I mean, there's no accident that he's, I think, the most viewed talk we've got. He's up there with Rory, with Jem. Jem Higgins, is her talk is beautiful. It's difficult to choose a favourite one, because there's so many that are so personable and so good for so many different reasons. I loved one of the first talks. In fact, we launched with this talk from Rob Schwartz, where Rob's based in New York, and he made parallels very early on. And his story makes a connection between his experience of 9/11, when he was, I believe he was on a stag do, and he was in Las Vegas, and his wife called him at whenever it was, 3 a.m. early morning, and said, "Switch on your TV, the world is exploding." And to manage the car journey back with his friends, they created a playlist, a music playlist to help them, I don't know, to help them process. I don't want to put words in his mouth. And so he, very early on in lockdown, with the pandemic, he created the coronavirus soundtrack. And it's a story of the soundtrack. He links to the playlist on Spotify, which he's left wide open for people to contribute to. We played it on our first day at the agency, our first day back working face-to-face, 6 weeks ago, 2 months ago, whenever it was. And it's now about 5.5 hours long, and it's brilliant. And I adore that, because it's evolved and become something more. But, you know, if you want to learn about copywriting, there's a masterclass from Vicky Ross. There's too many people to try and plug. I wouldn't do it justice.
Yeah, I mean, you've just mentioned two talks there that I've not come across, and I thought I've been pretty diligent.
Well, there's 100, I think we're on 134 talks now, I think, with a couple in the library or in the bank, so to speak. The talks, as you've, you know, really kindly plugged, they are great in their own right. But one thing that I couldn't have anticipated, none of us could have really anticipated, one of the hugely positive effects is that the platform itself has given people an in to talk about mental health that previously hadn't existed. So and this is going to sound trivial, but even going to a family member and saying, "Have you seen that isolated talk from Jem Higgins?" "No, what's isolated talks?" "Oh, it's this platform, blah, blah, blah." And I've had so many emails, Tim, from people who have said that it's allowed them to have that conversation. So for that alone, it's been wonderful, absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, and I think it's been like your platform, the Isolated Talks platform, has been, whether it's been by design or just has happened, has amplified that message to people who might not have had might not have had the opportunity in normal world, right, to talk about that topic, right? Because I wouldn't have got invite. I don't get invited to talk about mental health or life or anything like, you know, anything remotely important. In fact, if I'm marketing brand and story,
yeah.
But there's, you know, it's given people that vehicle to put that message into the world, and people you might only admire or know of vocationally, or out of personal interest. And I think it's super important. So I think we mentioned in the beginning that it's for a good cause, isn't it? It's for Samaritans. That's right.
Yeah. So we're raising money for Samaritans. The money, you know, we'd love that to be higher, and we probably haven't maybe pushed the donations too much. But again, when I mentioned about the not wanting people to feel obliged to donate talks, the same is equally, if not more so, true from a financial perspective, because all of us, myself included, or at least most of us, unless you've got shares in Zoom, say, are struggling financially over lockdown. It's a significant impact. So to go to people and expect or ask for money, again, is not really the most important thing here. One of the most important things is just raising awareness of mental health, trying to encourage people to talk to each other and check in on friends and families. And I'm no saint with that. I think at least two of my friends have suffered right under my nose in the last few weeks.
Yeah, it's been, I think I was talking actually to a gentleman at a Zoom networking thing who was doing some interesting consultancy for the, I can't remember what they're called, FSA, SFA, the people who look after banks, who regulate banks. They change, they change their initials quite often, I think. but they're now being regulated on, he was telling me, they're now going to be regulated on how they treat the most vulnerable customers, right? As opposed to the ones with the most like wealth, obviously. And I was like, well, that's interesting, but aren't 98% of the people now vulnerable customers? Because it just was one of those things that realized that it's been like, for me, who's 43 now, that it's the first challenge that I've had in at least my professional career that I've had no control over, right? I've not been able to strategize it or outthink it or do all the stuff that I've usually been able to done, or just apologize because it was me that fucked up in the first place. Like it's not, like it's not, you know, it's been that, and it has been impacted everybody and has brought everybody to connect, like connected everybody, hasn't it?
With I mean, there's so much. I think the stress and anxiety manifests itself in so many different ways, and financial is certainly one of them. But equally, I gave a talk to the University of Lincoln a couple of weeks ago to their advertising degree course or an amount of their course. And one of the things that came up ahead of the talk of something they wanted me to tackle was what can they do with the feeling of anxiety and stress and not feeling productive in the current climate? And the only answer I could really have is just accepting that the world is on fire and it's okay to not do anything. I think we so easily run ourselves into the ground in all industries, I'm sure, but for the purposes of this chat, I know we do in our industry. And I think it's just accepting the fact that the uncertainty is going to cause problems. Things are going to break, but equally there's unity within it. And without wanting to make crazy comparisons, I think it's almost our generation or these generations equivalent to the World War. It's a time of great suffering, but equally within that there's a time of great unity and, you know, collaboration. And it's just allowing yourself to recognize that is significant.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head. Like I use the phrase co-creation and collaboration and connectivity, all the C's have been prevalent over the last few months. And I think it's like it's a really important and a really good thing that you've done, and you should be proud of this piece of work and all the people you mentioned before, Matt Ballantyne and et cetera.
Yeah, Tommy and Glenn.
Kudos to all you guys. But so what's the to finish off really? What's the plan with Isolated Talks? Because fingers crossed, we won't be isolated forever.
I know. Well, as I say, we are sitting on a couple of talks that have come in the last few days that we plan to release just to keep momentum. Everything that we've done has been donated, from the original idea to the web design to the web, I don't know, the web hosting costs. Everything has come from donations, not just the talk. So I have no plan to turn it off. Whether it is or should become a shrine of sorts to 2020, I don't know. I don't know is the honest answer, Tim. I think if people want to continue to contribute, it would be foolish of me to prevent that in any way, especially if it enables us to reach one more person who has one more conversation about mental health. So I don't know. I've had lots of ideas. But as I said to Glenn when I first approached him with the idea, I don't know where it's going to go. And I said that at the time, we can't ever really know. We can have a plan. And I think it's exceeded the initial plan in terms of how popular it has become and how many people it seems to have helped. So onwards and upwards, I think.
Good. I think it will have life after lockdown too. But it will have life. It will be, you know, I said in the beginning, somebody will write a book or an annual or a diary or a journal of this time. And it sounds like I think your platform is one of those, along with Rob Schwartz playlist, maybe.
Exactly. Audio
visual treats, right? Audio visual treats.
Yeah. Maybe Ted will finally sue me. Who knows?
That'll be bad for their brand if they do, I would say. But thanks very much, Giles, for coming in. Why don't you let people know how they can best get hold of you? Obviously, we'll put all the links in the show notes as well.
Yeah, great. Okay, so isolatedtalks.com to check out that. I'm on LinkedIn, Twitter, at Giles_Edwards. GASP is my agency, gasp.agency, and that's probably enough links for now, I think.
That's all of
it. Do get in touch, and if anyone wants to get involved or ask any questions or support, then you know, please don't hesitate to just drop us a note.
Brilliant. That'd be really good. I'll put all the links for everybody in the show notes, and I'll shout about them in the social web. But this has been
amazing.
Rebite number 10. Thanks very much, Giles, again for giving us your time on this Thursday afternoon, I think. And I'll catch you next time, people.
Yeah. Thank you, Tim.